You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome into a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil. It's another Blue Notebook show where David and I scout a different NBA draft prospect and report back with pros and cons, player comps, their fit with the Heat. David, you had Oregon big man Bol Bol. Let's start with some of his stats and measurements and then get to his pros and cons.
Sure. Played 1 year at Oregon, measured at 7'2", weighed in at just 208 pounds at the combine. So that was a concern because he was listed at 235 by Oregon. So only wound up playing 9 games there because of a fractured foot. And so the concerns are whether or not he was inaccurately listed as far as his weight is concerned or whether or not he dropped that weight. But either way, he's just at 208 pounds now, and considering his height, that's a major concern, but we'll get into that later. His wingspan's pretty impressive, obviously, 7'7", a 9'7" standing reach, so clearly a very, very big, long body. As I said, playing just 9 games in college, so a lot of these stats, you know, you can only take them with a grain of salt, but he did average about 30 minutes per game, and during that stretch, he had about 21 points per game, 9.6 rebounds, 2.7 blocks, and an assist, and just under a steal per game. He did shoot very well, as you could imagine somebody his size doing, 57% overall, but what really stands out is his 52% shooting on three-point attempts, of which he took nearly 2.8 per game, again, just in 9 games. He also shot nearly 76% at the line.
Wait, he shot what from three-point range?
52%.
Jesus, okay. It's really good.
Yes, that's pretty acceptable. So, yeah. Again, if you look at it as 3 attempts per game, he took only 27%. I mean, 27 attempts, or just under 27 right. attempts in total. So,
And he only played 9 games because of the foot injury, that's right?
Yes.
Okay.
He shot nearly 76% at the line. He took almost 4 attempts per game. So, you know, the stroke and shooting mechanics are there, and people project that this will translate to the next level. So that's obviously one of his biggest pros, but I think the biggest thing about him is his size, length. For all the talk of versatility around the league, even when draft Knicks, nothing is enticing as the potential of size. It's the old adage that you can't teach height, and he has that in spades, obviously, and, you know, clearly a very long body. But in addition to that, you know, he's also pretty mobile for a guy his size, and that's what really stands out when you look at Bol Bol, is that for somebody his size at 7'2" and nearly, you know, 230 pounds, let's say, he does move very, very well. He won't exactly break you down one-on-one, but he's active off the ball, and his size provides such a huge target that in combination with his fluidity, he's a very active offensive threat. So you can look to him to, you know, toss the lob. He can clear enough space there where he can get to the rim pretty easily. And you know, he probably could get past slower footed centers. I imagine he could probably get past Hassan Whiteside pretty easily, but at the same time, I don't know how athletic he is as far as his explosiveness and getting over a guy like Whiteside who can block shots at the rim. So the mobility helps on defense as well. If he's allowed to crowd around the basket, he's great there, obviously, because of his length. He's not exactly explosive as a rim protector, say, you know, he's not quite a Jared Allen type. But if he whiffs on the first block attempt, he's capable of popping back up for a second attempt. So he does have some spring in his step, just not exactly. Who knows how he'll translate, again, after the foot injury. But people expect that that's going to be something that he's resolved for the most part. But he's quick enough to be a help defender as well. On the perimeter, not so great. But again, we'll save that for later. I think his touch offensively is also something that a lot of people are looking at. He's not very clunky, and he does have an offensive repertoire. He's not just a guy who can catch lobs. He does have a floater. He has a nice first step. Not exactly not explosive, but, you know, he does have some skills, and he does have nice touch around the basket. Something, you know, again, unlike Whiteside, that he doesn't have to learn at his age. So that's always really good. And then the biggest thing with him is, in combination with that size, everybody sees a wealth of potential there. And obviously, his father, Manute Bol, who played, you know, just a few games with the Miami Heat back in 1994-95 season, you know, there's a connection to Miami there, albeit a very small one. His late father, I should add, because Manute did pass away some time ago. But there's heritage there. There's a familiarity with the NBA game. And then, although he's not as big as his father, he does have incredible size, but he also takes his game to a more contemporary level where he is very fluid and does have, like I said, a versatile offensive game.
So you mentioned there that you saw his fluidity at 230 pounds. You used the 230-pound figure because when you were watching the game film, that he was ostensibly playing at 230, if we believe that he lost the weight in that Oregon and didn't just lie about the weight. Because you mentioned that we're not really sure. Like, the weight thing is a little shady with him. They might have just listed him at 230, where he's always been sort of at 208. Okay.
That's about
so
it.
If we could imagine then that at 208 pounds, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, but at 208 pounds, the mobility would still be there, assuming that he recovers, blah, 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 from the foot thing.
Yeah, the foot thing isn't a concern, yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like everybody's, like, pretty good with the foot thing. Everybody's figures, he had plenty of time off, he'll recover just fine, he's a young guy, he'll be okay.
Basically, yes. So okay. I don't think that's, of all the potential things, that it's not an immediate concern. Now, and this is my first con when it comes to him, is that injury. Because of somebody his size, it's just, to me anyway, and for a lot of people who kind of review the draft and potential options, it's just too big a question mark. Too many big men, from Bill Walton all the way down to Kristaps Porzingis, have fallen prey to foot issues, leg issues eventually. These are things that could continue to mount up as time goes on. And so while it's not a problem at 19, it could be a problem at 24, down at 26, 27, and you don't want to see that career kind of sink prematurely because of those lingering foot issues. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen to Porzingis, but it's somebody his size, and you and I both talked to him and stood next to him. He's a huge fellow, obviously, but he's, there's going to be issues with his health. I mean, I think when we talked about him being a potential trade option for Miami before he was shipped to Dallas, I had mentioned those. I think you did as well. So yeah, there are concerns there with Ball, and although he may not show those kind of issues immediately, they could be down there down the stretch.
I might be stepping on another one of your cons here, but are you concerned about the weight thing? Are you concerned that at 200 pounds he's just going to get pushed around at the center position?
That is where I was going. So not just that, although that is obviously a factor, but because nobody's quite sure about what happened, whether or not he just wasn't doing any weight training. Or it could be, and some people have theorized this is the case, that he might just be kind of lazy. His work ethic has been questioned. He has these physical tools. Again, he has the heritage there because his father played in the league. But like a lot of big men, maybe there's not enough like actual drive and interest in proving himself at this level. So to have that weight drop so precipitously is a concern for a lot of people. And then, as you said, just on the floor itself, does he have enough strength to get past stronger centers and forwards? I would say not at this point. Like, he has leverage. He knows how to use his size extremely well. But eventually, that's going to catch up to him at the NBA level because there are guys who are skilled and big enough and certainly strong enough to keep him out of his comfort zone. And so I would say that's going to be a big issue for him as well, unless he's able to find a system that helps him grow, develop, and put on the kind of weight he needs to without, again, endangering his foot and any future injury issues. So if he stays out of the perimeter, he's a pretty good defender. He can defend ball handlers, but he doesn't always show the ability. Again, maybe tying into that work ethic, he doesn't always show it consistently. So there are people that question whether or not he just seems to kind of lag off and not exactly care about whether or not he's staying in front of a ball handler. So that's a concern. He's also not a very good screener. So we already have one bad screener, Hassan Whiteside. I don't know that he's necessarily another good addition for Miami. I know that's something we'll talk about in our third segment.
Yeah, and that light, being at a lightweight too, you imagine a lot. There's probably not a ton of lower body strength, and when you when you screen, the whole thing, get your ass into the guy. And if there's not a bunch of ass there, then I don't know.
Yeah. And then lastly, there are concerns about his passing too. Like, he does have nice touch. He's a sharp passer, but somewhat unwilling, and he can get a little stubborn if he's in double teams or if he gets caught and doesn't have an immediate go-to option there. He might try and force a shot, and that's an issue as well.
So a couple red flags there then with Bol Bol. And, I don't think, that was thorough, but it's also, that's kind of what we've heard about him. There's just a small sample size due to the injury, concerns with that injury, the shady weight loss or the weight line thing. Also, by the way, it would not surprise me at all if Oregon never really measured him or put him on a scale and just called him 230 because maybe that's what his high school weight was listed at or whatever. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all, especially in the Pac-12. But what are your comps for Bol Bol?
Well, the Porzingis one is an immediate one, obviously, because of the size and length and the versatility in his offensive repertoire. I think those are the things that we see in Porzingis. He's a solid rebounder, like KP, versatile defender, although somewhat inconsistently. So that's a possibility. I've seen Thon McCurr as well.
Yeah, I was thinking Thon McCurr, because even McCurr is light in the shorts, too. I mean, Porzingis is at least, he's listed at, I'm looking it up right now. Porzingis is listed at 240, and I believe that. I mean, Porzingis is—he's lanky.
Sure,
he's not a small dude, right? Like, there's definition to that.
And this
that
is
body.
In his fourth year, right? Fourth year in the league, so Porzingis he's had an opportunity to put on some weight there, and maybe that's how Bolt projects as well. So there's potential and there's hope there. So we'll see what happens. Sean Bradley's another comp that I saw. Kind of one I made myself also, because just Bradley was this really long body. Although I think the difference is that Bull's certainly much more fluid and not necessarily as big as Bradley was, who was listed at 7'5", I think, or 7'6", maybe. So, I think you're looking at a particular stereotype there, a long body. And in his case, just happens to have much more skill. He does have a pretty good handle. So I think Thon McCurr is a little shorter, obviously. So he's a little bit smoother in moments as an offensive player. At least physically, he doesn't seem like he's getting tangled up in his length or size in any way, although there are moments there where you question what he's doing with the ball. So not an exact comp, but,
Do you feel like Bol Bol has better, like just a better feel for the game than
yes.
Thon McCurr? Okay.
Yes.
So that's, right, cause that's the big knock against McCurr, is that he just doesn't really know what he's doing sometimes.
Right.
Yeah. Are you concerned also that he might, and this just seems funny to say in a league where we all want our 7-footers now to shoot threes, but are you concerned at all that he almost spends too much time out there?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, where his sweet spot is. He'd prefer not to bang it. I think that's partly because of the weight and everything else. And, I think he has that part in his game. So I don't know if concern is the right way, but he can't just camp out there. Like, he's just too big a body, and it's limiting his rim protection on defense, and it's also limiting his ability to pull down rebounds. So you don't want him necessarily spacing the floor that way. Like, I think there are better options than that. And although he can do it, I don't know that you'd want to rely on that as far as his offense is concerned.
Upside scale?
It's all over the place for him. It's kind of hard to predict.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him projected in the second round to, like, as in the top 10. I mean, it really depends on who you ask, but for you, I guess it's...
So I mean, for me, I see him as being a fringe player about 40%. Probably a little bit high, given that he does have talent, but the injury issues could negate all that talent rather quickly. And we've seen this before, unfortunately. And he has all the skills, all the size. He has great potential, but sometimes that potential just never gets realized. And so that's a big possibility with him, and one that I'm concerned about. You know, he does have enough size, so I think his chances of being a rotational player are pretty good. I have him at 45%. And then, on the positive end, he could put it all together. He could all of a sudden be a new dynamic version of that versatile five. He could put on enough weight. He could be relatively healthy for the rest of his career. And he has enough skill and touch where I think he could be a really dynamic player. You could put his all-star chances at about 10%. And I'd give him even a very slight chance, 5%, of being a superstar someday. Maybe not a great one, but I think there's a possibility there that he could wind up being very dynamic and tying all these different skills together and having that potential fully realized. I wouldn't count on it, but there's hope there. And I think that's what a lot of people are looking at.
Yeah, and I think that there are scouts in the league who would take that 5% and make that a lot higher and probably come down on that fringe number because they see the size, they see the shooting, they fall in love.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the deal with Bol Bol, is it's kind of in the eye of the beholder there. Where would... If you were just, not even the Heat, but just Team X, generic NBA team, and you're building your big board, where would Bol Bol just be on yours? We'll talk about if he's a fit for the Heat in later in the show, but just specifically, like, just on a big board in a vacuum, would he be a lottery guy for you? Is he towards the tail end of the first round for you?
To me, this is kind of symbolic of why I am hesitant about the draft, or maybe not necessarily a big fan of it, because there are just so many questions. I'd have to have him for multiple individual workouts, and he may not even want that. I'd have to see it all put together. Like, you can only see so much in a combine. You can only glean so much from a 9-game sample size, and you'd have to do some pretty heavy work as far as his medical records are concerned to determine whether or not you're going to invest a high pick on somebody like him. So for me, I'd say he's probably 15 to 20.
Okay.
I know. That's pretty, I mean, it's fringe
middle
lottery
of first
player.
Round. Yeah.
I mean, it's not bad, but it's not great either.
Okay. Let's take a break here. Coming up next, I'll have my scouting report on PJ Washington. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. And Untuck It. Dads come in all kinds of shapes and sizes, and so should their shirts. Like tall, short, slim, and relaxed. Ever wonder why your father's button-ups look so long and baggy at the end of the day? It can be hard for guys to pull off a casual, untucked look that isn't sloppy. That's where Untuck It comes in. Untuck It is the solution that fits just right. Their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA to get 20% off. Okay, so the PJ Washington scattering report. I'll start with just some of the measurables and stats and stuff. 20-year-old power forward out of Kentucky. Returned to Kentucky for a second season. That's rare. It doesn't always happen in Kentucky. 6'8", 230 pounds. Measured in with a 7'2" wingspan, which is really nice at that position. 15.2 points per game on 52% shooting. He made 42.3% of his three-point attempts, 72 attempts throughout the season. Also put up 7.5 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 1.2 blocks, almost logged a whole steal a game, all in 29 minutes per game. So he's productive, and that's the main pro here. He's a productive scorer, right, at that 15 points per game. Really good shooting clips. Showed noticeable improvement on that outside jumper from his freshman to his sophomore year. And that was huge. I mean, his freshman year wasn't shooting a great percentage, but in his sophomore year, he was up there at 42%. And you look at his shooting stroke, and it's repeatable, it's consistent. He's got a good bend in his knees. He dips the ball and brings it up, and it's not a slow release. He's got a nice release, a good high release in front of his face. It looks good. It works. And the production's there.
Yeah, I was watching that, and I saw that kind of jump, and that was my concern about somebody like him, and whether or not it's sustainable. But you're absolutely right; the mechanics seem right. It seems like he just had never really thought about expanding his range as a freshman, and decided, you know what, this is the key. And so, you know, it's the rare case of somebody going back for a second year, but it really paid off for him because he was able to expand his game's range specifically, and it made him a much higher draft pick, I think.
Absolutely. And look, the shooting is just where it starts. I think he has a natural feel for getting open. Really good off-ball cutter. Mm-hmm. Gets to the rim without the ball. Just gets to the rim and finds an open space. And he's available in the dunker spot for dump-offs and things like that. He can finish at the rim with both hands. I thought that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this. He does have this nice like pet move, a hook shot going over his right shoulder. He goes to that a lot. And he can finish through contact and get to the line. He was a little bit more than 5 free throw attempts per game. Not afraid to put his shoulder in. Good body control in the air to get that shot up. And again, just good feel around the basket to not only get to the line, but convert on and ones and things like that. So, as a scorer, multidimensional, really good feel, really good touch, especially in the painted area. And a really good shooting stroke from the three-point range that I think is repeatable and translates to the NBA level. Other than the scoring, really good passer at his position. Uses his height to find open teammates. A willing passer at his position, too. Not afraid to drive and kick, even, sometimes. If the shot's not there, sometimes he'll force a shot, but a lot of times he'll, again, use that height to if he's getting doubled or whatever, to find that open guy. So that helps him, too. On the defensive end of the ball, stout on-ball defender who uses his wingspan really well. You know, he'll crouch down in the defensive stance. He'll get his arms wide, and he could stay in front of, you know, ball handlers. He could stay in front of big men. Just, you know, if he is rotating, he will get in front of his guy, and he'll make a good defensive effort. Isn't as good as a rebounder as you'd like. I think His rebounding numbers is 7.5 per game, a little inflated because he does a really good job of chasing his own misses, But those count towards rebounds, right? Those putbacks count towards rebounds. Just in general, on the defensive glass and things like that, he could do a better job of boxing out. And now we're getting into the cons here, but you'd like to see him do a better job on the defensive glass of boxing out, putting in the effort there, as opposed to just, instead of boxing out, I think he tends to try to just grab the rebound and run, and he doesn't really do the work before the rebound starts. So,
correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm hearing some very underlying tones of positivity there. Like, you seem like you're pretty high on him, and I can imagine,
yeah,
based on the description and what we've seen from him, he's more of a high floor, low ceiling kind of guy. And so you look at where he's projected, you know, probably, I think, late first round.
Yeah, mid to late first round. Yeah,
right. That's what I'm saying. So is it just because there's a lack of quote-unquote potential there? I'm curious to hear where you're going with the cons here, because you do seem like you're high on what he can do. He sounds like a great scorer, pretty solid defender, not exactly a veteran, but an experienced guy who showed
improvement from one year to the next, which is you can't say for a lot of these one-and-done guys.
Right.
I like that. And I mentioned the rebounding thing because it is a concern, but you know my take on rebounds. I think it's a loser stat, so I don't really care that much. But he can get a little wild at times on offense, and I think that's where you start to run into a concern with him, and maybe rushes a little too much too often. But you can also chalk that up to the fact that he's 20 years old, so I'm not that worried about it. Again, I like his overall feel. The main thing with him is that he's not a terrific athlete. Like he's not elite. But he might be, like, whatever below elite is, he might even be below that. He's just doesn't really get off the ground very high. He's not a great runner, even though he's comfortable handling the ball in transition and doing and pushing the pace that way. He's not going to run by anybody. He's got a pretty slow first step. So when I talk about, he's got the three-point stroke and he's a good cutter off the ball, I worry a lot about his ability to, when the defense closes in on him, like, let's, if he's in the corner or above the break at the three-point line, and the defender closes in on him, I have concerns about his ability to put the ball on the floor and get to the rim from there. He seems to me to be, he was able to do it at Kentucky, but that's college. I don't know that he could do it against NBA talent, NBA athletes, where he's able to put the ball on the ground and then close and attack those closeouts and get to the rim. I think he might be able to put the ball on the floor and sidestep. He might be able to put the ball on the floor and get a step or two within the arc, but now he's sort of in this jumbled mid-range area. I don't know that he has the athleticism to get all the way to the rim, and then once you get into that jumbled mid-range area, I go back to that. Sometimes he has a tendency to rush things or have like a wild pass or something like that. He could panic because now he's in a zone that he doesn't really like to play in. He likes to play at the rim or at the three-point line. He's not a mid-range guy. So you like that from an analytics standpoint, but you wonder about that when it gets to what comes next in the flow of a game. High body fat. He measured in at the fourth highest body fat at the combine at 8.6%, which sounds great for you or me, but at the NBA level, it's not. It was again fourth highest percentage in the combine. So I wonder if you look at a team like the Heat who might be able to bring that body fat down. Does that increase some of that athleticism that we just talked about? I don't think so. I just don't know that he's that natural of an athlete. He doesn't finish above the rim. He's not going to be a lob threat, which you kind of want out of a power forward or even a center. Kentucky would play him at center sometimes, especially with that wingspan. So without having that elite athleticism, you sort of wonder what else he can provide other than just being a guy who could make threes from the corner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially if he's not going to be a great rebounder either. So that's the major con against him. I can go into comps unless you have any other comments or questions.
No, I mean, I've seen some things like, his parents were both collegiate basketball players too. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of, the kind of background that the Heat like.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because I think that's where his feel for the game comes from.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It sounds like the cons, and correct me if I'm wrong, are all things that are probably pretty correctable. Like the weight loss or whatever, the weight issues, if there are any, could probably be changed pretty quickly. And that might lend itself to more increased athleticism or at least slightly more explosive activity on defense. And I think those things can kind of be taught. And I mean, do you project that he'll be able to make those kinds of improvements? I know that's a big question mark, not that nobody has the answers to, but from everything I've seen, it seems like a lot of people expect him to be a pretty solid rotation player,
yeah.
if not necessarily a great, you know, all-star type player. And I know that you'll probably get into that as far as your
No, I think the rebounding thing, like the consistent effort and stuff like that, you can get there. People have been concerned about his ability to read and react defensively. Like, he's a good on-ball defender, not necessarily always in the right spot off the ball. And so, but look, I'm not as worried about that stuff as a lot of draft Knicks are. I'm like, and the motor thing, I question the motor thing, because these guys are playing in college. They don't get paid, right? Like, I don't know. I think that can kind of go either way. I think the college experience, the professional experience are so different. I'm not concerned about what I see on the court as much as, you know, I think that kind of stuff bears out in interviews and when you kind of get to know the person. I like the interviews actually more than sometimes I see the stuff on the court, even though if you see a really high motor, that's definitely worth something. I'm not as worried as much as other people with when the motor thing is a question. And I've seen the motor thing with PJ Washington as a question, but right. I'm not concerned with it. So I think the body fat thing obviously can come down, but the athleticism, there is a real ceiling there. And if you look at the production there that he put up, and if he was an elite athlete at that production, we're talking about a top five pick in the draft. He's just not a great athlete. And so I think if you're scouting him for your team, you need to know exactly where you want to place him, and you're not really going to be betting on his upside. So some of the comps that I have for him, by the way, Jeremy Grant, Thunder forward.
Oh, wow.
But
see, that guy has incredible explosive athleticism.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you know, he's springy. He can jump high and you know, rim run and stuff like that. So Jeremy Grant, in the sense that he kind of plays the same position. You play him at the power forward. You could play him at small ball center and probably jigger your lineups towards that. And then can just and really drain it from 3-point range. I think Jeremy Grant has shown an ability to do that. So Jeremy Grant, Thaddeus Young, who has developed as a better rebounder throughout his career, but similar size, just. Good feel for the game. Neither player forces a lot, and so I think you could play him at a similar powerful. He's just not an elite athlete, but just sort of gets the job done. He'll be productive. He's not going to be a 25 point per game scorer, but he'll give you 12 or 15 a game or something in that range. So,
watching him and those video highlights, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Taj Gibson too.
Like, yeah, I've seen the Taj Gibson thing a lot. Taj is never like. Maybe like modern Taj Gibson, who tried to shoot threes.
Millsap, like then? Any comparison to Millsap?
I don't love the Millsap one.
Okay.
James Johnson on Ritalin.
So a little bit wild. In control, but not necessarily as flashy. Okay.
Yeah. So those are my comps. As far as the upside scale goes, I've got him 20% as a fringe player. I just think that it's pretty low. The only way I could see that him being a fringe player is if beyond the 3-point shot, nothing else really shows up. Like we've seen,
that, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's some concerns there. Like you know, you'd like to say any big who could shoot threes will find a place in the league. Well,
not really. Yeah.
Look at Ryan Anderson. He counts as a fringe guy. He barely played last year. So the last 2 years. So he needs to do more. And so I've got 20% fringe, but I'm pretty confident that he's going to be better than that. I've got him at. As a contributor, either like one of your top bench guys or a rotation guy, 70%.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, I think he's gonna produce. He's gonna fill a need for you. He's long enough and he's good enough on the ball defensively that he's just gonna fill a spot. Like, he's just gonna be in the league for some. He's probably not gonna be a power forward for one team for his whole career. He'll probably be a power forward for a whole bunch of teams for his whole career. All-star, I've got 15% only because he does have the ability to produce on offense. So if he goes out and has a 20-10 year, who knows? You can make an all-star game. Superstar, I have 0%. There's just no chance. And I'd like to say that there's a chance for all these guys. With his concrete ceiling as an athlete, 0% chance he ends up as a superstar. But if you draft him, you're going to be pretty certain that he's going to be a contributor for you right away.
You know, I'm looking at the mock drafts, and he's nowhere listed where the Heat are. He's probably, again, a late first rounder.
Yeah.
He could go to Indiana immediately and replace Thaddeus Young, who I believe is a free agent.
Yep.
Or he could also go to San Antonio, where all of a sudden he'll turn into an all-star.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's got like, he's got things that you like. Like, I really like, I know I've said this, but that feel for the game, the fact that he has a pet move offensively already, some people use that as a con, but I'm like, the dude's 20. He's got a move. Like, that,
he's not just dunking on fools, which is a lot of guys, well, a lot of guys do that.
Got really good touch with that righty hook. Like, he's going to have to develop more moves. People will scout that almost right away and start blocking it and being ready for it, but... You know, I like that he has that. I like that he has that. He's developed as a shooter. He's put the work in. His form looks really good. Like, I like the work that he puts in behind the scenes. And because of those things, I think he could still get a lot better from just a skill level.
Only in draft analysis does having a go-to move seem like a weakness, as opposed to just you've got one actually clear tool in your toolkit and you can continue to add others, as opposed to, well, he just doesn't do anything very well, but there's the potential for that. I mean, only draft Knicks can say, what, having a go-to move is a weakness. It's so bizarre to me, which is why part of the reason why I dislike the whole process, because there's so little information these guys. And at least in his case, like, from what I've seen from your description of him, I think he's going to be a real good, solid rotation player.
I really like him. Yeah, I really like him.
I don't know if I like him at 13. I'm sure that's something we'll get into later on. Yeah. But he's going to be a productive player, and you're going to wonder if he would have been a contributor for Miami or some other team. But he's just it's a concern. You can't take on somebody like this at 13, unfortunately, because there's such a limited ceiling there.
Well, this is a good time to take a break and then talk about our fit. These guys' fit with the Heat potentially. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Today's show is brought to you by Grip 6, where their goal is to literally make the best belt that's ever been made. Grip 6 is an easy, thoughtful gift for dads, brothers, husbands, uncles, grandpas, moms, wives. David, easy and thoughtful is what the ad copy says here. I mean, could you get, like, isn't that like the sweet spot? If you're looking to buy somebody a gift, you're like, I want it to come off as thoughtful, but I also don't want to put a whole lot of work into it.
Well, it's not even about not putting work into it. It's about finding something utilitarian, too. It's like, who doesn't have at least one belt in their wardrobe? I mean, you have to have a number of belts, and the versatility that comes with this is amazing, and that's why it's such a great tool.
Ultra lightweight, no holes, no flap. It carries a low profile with the buckle laying flat against the waist, making it super comfortable. Grip 6 is the only belt with no holes, no flap, and no bulk. And today, Grip 6 is a special offer for you. Check it out at grip6.com/lock. And remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Heat on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and constantly updated new features. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Heat. Thank you to our sponsors, Hotel.com. Thanks to UNTUCKit. Thanks to Grip 6 Belts. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Okay. Bol Bol, PJ Washington. We kind of got two really different prospects here. Bol Bol, ultimate high upside, low floor, high risk, high reward type guy. PJ Washington, on the other hand, really high floor. You almost are 100% certain he's going to be a contributor. You may, but a very clear and definitive ceiling to how good he can be. So again, it kind of, I think it depends on what type of team you are, what you're looking for. If you're looking to be safe, or if you're looking basically to make a swing for the fences here. I've said before, David, I think the Heat need to swing for the fences. Do you think Bol Bol is the swing worth taking?
No, I do not. I have too many concerns. Look, I'm looking at this roster, and that's obviously a huge concern. Like, the thing is, I think Bol could be a great player, as I said before when I was looking at his future there. I don't know if this team has the kind of patience necessary to let him develop. And it kind of makes sense. In a vacuum, you could say, look, they've got Whiteside in the roster. They've got Adebayo, who's obviously their starter. They even have Olenek to an extent, who I think is a great player. So you're drafting him, and he could be your fourth center right away. Now, you could trade Whiteside, or he could opt out. Sure, maybe that makes a little bit more sense then, but he's probably not going
to play. Can you play Bol Bol next to Bam, given that Bol Bol can space the floor, and that Bam can basically be your center who defends the paint?
Oh, but, I mean, the matchups there as far as, like, who... I mean, he'd have to switch on to centers, and even then, I'd see that as that's a matchup they could exploit pretty easily. Like, I mean, certainly not in any kind of small ball situations. Although he is capable, again, of guarding perimeter players, He's just like, I mean, if you go small ball with, say, like a Draymond Green, you're not putting Bol Bol on him. I mean, and I know there's very few players that can match up with somebody like that, but that's a concern too. So, okay. I mean,
we know that the Heat interviewed him.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's feelers out there. There's rumblings that they're kind of serious about Bol Bol. I don't really believe that. I think that might be just smoke. Due diligence and smoke and saying like, hey, if you want Bol Bol, because he's a guy that teams will fall in love with. Somebody's going to fall in love with this guy. And people, the Heat are kind of right in that striking distance.
And I think that's looking pretty bad right now, right? I mean, there's something great. The mystery box is always going to be enticing around draft time. And I think you see a guy who only played 9 games, wasn't exposed. I mean, think about how many players are exposed in the Final Four tournament. And, you know, how many players wind up having this great upside until it doesn't wind up being that way in clutch moments.
It might have helped him that he only played 9 games.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. He shot 52%. Would we have expected that to sustain over the course of a regular season? Not. Probably not. So
we don't like the fit there.
I don't. I mean, I don't know that Miami can afford to wait. I don't know that, you know, if they're going to go on this all in on the youth movement there, he fits. But at the same time, like, I mean, how does he fit alongside Bam Adebayo? I mean, is he going to be an option there in the future? I don't see it. I mean, it's too many questions for my taste. And so while that potential is enticing, it's not. I'm not a gambler, and I wouldn't take a chance on him.
So we've gotten a few questions here about Bol Bol. Not questions, but basically people asking to do the Bol Bol thing. I think there are Heat fans, and we'll wrap up your piece here with this, but there are Heat fans who really do like Bol Bol. They like the idea of Bol Bol. What would you tell them?
You're kind of putting me on the spot a little bit there, but it's exciting to see this kind of skill set. I don't feel it's going to translate to the next level, and I think the injury concerns are going to bog what could have been a great career. And so if you want to take a chance on that and hope that injuries won't be an issue, sure, I'd see take a chance. But I don't think Miami, with the fan base that is so rabid for actual productivity and superstardom, he's not your guy.
Okay, so for PJ Washington, I think he would be a great fit for the Heat.
Yeah.
I think if you could plug him in right away at power forward, and he would be an upgrade. Considering that you'd like to probably get off the James Johnson contract. And I am starting to think that there's going to be a trade market for James Johnson this summer. Hmm. He's more skilled than Derek Jones Jr., which isn't saying much, but he is. I think he fills a need right away. And on a cheap rookie-scale contract, PJ Washington, Bam Adebayo, that's a front court that works really well. If you believe that, especially when Bam keeps working with Chris Bosh and developing his jumper and stuff like that, you have potentially two guys there with a great feel offensively, who could put the work in defensively, and they match up well. PJ Washington has a little bit of length, which I think you need next to Bam, who isn't a small center, but he isn't the biggest center either. So you'd like to make sure that power forward is just another big guy, but a big guy with skill, and that's PJ Washington. He's a big guy with skills who can stretch the floor from the corner. And if you look at the way that Eric Spoelstra likes to run his offense with, you know, drive, kick, swing. Like, he's a guy who you can swing to and he'll hit an open jumper rather consistently. From an X's and O's standpoint, he fits. From a personality standpoint, I think he fits. You talked about the fact that his parents played basketball. You're right. I think that matters. He's got the quote-unquote basketball in his blood type of guy. They're going to like the fact that he puts the work in behind the scenes. They're going to like all that. You just can't take him at 13.
No, I'll flip the same question. Then, yeah, I mean, considering how this team and its fans are starred for superstar level talent, how can you sell them on a guy who could best be a very solid contributor?
You can't. I mean,
what if it's a draft day trade and you drop to 18, 19 and he's still on the
board? I think you could fall in love with PJ Washington and you could trade back. And if you trade back, and I'm glad you bring that up, because if you trade back and pick up some future draft picks, which we know the Heat don't have. If you could trade back and pick up a second-round pick, it might be worth it. If you don't love any of these guys at 13, and we've talked about this, there is a chance that when 13 rolls around, there isn't a guy on their board that they love. And if that's the case, You could trade the pick outright for a veteran. We talked about the Mike Conley situation in the last podcast. Mm-hmm. Or you could trade back. And I do think trading back is an option for the Heat in this draft. I really do. Especially if you don't want to take a guy with 0% chance of superstar potential at 13. And I don't think you do. So if you could trade back to 17, 18, 19, 20, somewhere around then, and grab P.J. Washington and pick up some future assets, maybe you could trade back and get off of one of these other salaries at the same time, one of these long-term salaries. I'm not sure getting back to... Maybe you have to drop all the way back to like the late 20s and hope that P.J. Washington is there. I don't think he's going to last that long. But yeah, I do think that if the Heat were to trade back, Washington would be an option. At 13, I don't see him as an option.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, we kind of have fallen into the same pattern on a number of times where we look at one player that shares maybe a similarity or, in this case, a great disparity. Like, Bol Bol seems like nothing but potential, but a high risk. With Washington, there's almost no risk, really, and he seems right. like he's a great contributor, but a lack of a star ability, probably.
Yeah, we kind of we're there's this sweet spot where, look, anybody with a high ceiling, any of these high-risk, high-reward guys are going to come with red flags. Like, we did our scouting report on Kevin Porter Jr., tremendous red flags about what his whole deal is off the court, right?
Right.
Kobe White, red flags because of his small hands. Romeo Langford, red flags. All these guys have red flags, but when you're picking at 13, if any of these high-ceiling guys are there, they're going to be there because they slipped to you because of their red flags. It's just, are those the type of problems that you want to recruit? Or is the injury stuff, and is his potential fit with this roster, speaking about Bol Bol here, is that enough to hit the button and say, you know what, let's make Bol Bol our pick here? Because what does that look like, best case? It looks like Bam Adebayo and Bol Bol starting your front court. Do you want that? No, I don't think you do. So for Bol Bol, I would say no. For P.J. Washington, I think he's going to be great somewhere. I just don't know if you're the Heat, if there's one of these other guys, like a Kevin Porter Jr. or Romeo Langford. And you and I did the Romeo Langford thing. We don't love Romeo Langford, but I would rather take a chance on him than just, you know, take the easy way out and grab P.J. Washington, who's not going to necessarily move the needle for you. He's just going to fill a need for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, with the 13th pick anyway, right? I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that makes sense. No, it's interesting. I'm curious to see how it plays out. I'm trying to think, even as we're talking about this now, given Miami's and Pat Riley specifically a draft pattern, I can't imagine a player like Bol and his injury issues being on the radar. Like I as much as a lot of our fans and listeners are talking about it, I just don't think it's realistic. Whatever buzz there might be, doesn't seem practical.
Like, and
Riley stays away from European players. So as much as we like Sekou Doumbouya, I don't see that happening either. And he stays away from injured players. I think he'd rather go for a solid player. If that means trading down so they can grab a guy like Washington, that makes more sense, to be honest with you.
I think the Bam Adebayo pick taught us a lot about how this team wants to draft players. It was out of the blue a little bit, right?
Some people thought it was a reach. Yeah,
some people thought it was a reach, but he rose late in the process, right? It was like the day before the draft, he started popping up in the lottery for a lot. I think Denver was in there. Saw him going mock to Denver a whole lot. So we'll see. I think that there are guys right now who could be in this 20s range, like P.J. Washington is, who can still rise up through this process. And so that's why it's worth going through those guys. But I don't know that P.J. Washington is the guy, because Bam Adebayo was an elite athlete with a high floor.
Right.
P.J. Washington is an okay athlete with a high floor. So when we're looking at this, I think you want to look for a guy who's an elite athlete with a high floor, and that tends to be what Pat Riley looks at. Maybe didn't produce a whole lot in college. Again, P.J. Washington produced a lot at Bam Adebayo's alma mater, Kentucky. But at 13, if you're looking to take a swing here, and Bam Adebayo could end up being the best player on the Heat in 2 or 3 years. We don't know. Like his ceiling is high. But, just didn't really get a chance to show it. And so at 13, I think he was banking on the fact that he didn't produce in college, but we think he could produce at the NBA level. And that was sort of the red flag with Bam, was that he didn't produce. So, that's my spiel on that. I'm trying to think if we got anything else here. I think that's pretty much it here.
Yeah, I'd like to And that maybe this is a little vague, but I'd like to hear from some of our listeners. You know, obviously they've been very encouraging and supportive of this, but if there is a point of contention, if you think we might have missed something along the way, or if we didn't look at it from an angle that you might, please feel free to engage us. We have a mailbag always open every week, and we'd love to hear from you, especially about the series. We're doing this because it seems like it's being so well received, and also obviously it helps us to kind of go through these players a little bit more in depth and research their specific fit and their talents and their pros and cons and things of that sort. But as always, we want to hear from you, and we want to hear if we're on the right path, or if there are any, you know, questions or concerns or disagreements. Those are always welcome.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Any of those comments, we want to put a mailbag up here pretty soon too. So send us whatever mailbag questions you have, whether it's heat related or whether it's draft related, heat related, whatever you want to talk about. Send those mailbag questions. Again, find us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat. Use that hashtag AskLOHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes. Yeah.